Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I am an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line, in Los Angeles, a man who is living for love, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
I'm good. You are the true blue to my Like a Prayer, the Like a Virgin to my Madonna, the I'm Breathless to my MDNA.
Yeah. All right, I'll be the I'm Breathless to your MDNA.
I was kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel there. I'm sorry.
I appreciate that. Well, Keith, we obviously are referencing Madonna, who has a new album out this week. We will get to that in a second.
Madonna. Keep it all inside.
We also are going to be talking about it's been a busy news week in terms of music news. We're going to be talking about the Robin Thicke and Pharrell Blurred Lines trial, Iggy Azalea's tour postponement, and kind of a rough start to 2015 for her. And then we'll move over to the charts, talking about Uptown Funk, Thinking Out Loud, Kanye West, Carly Rae Jepsen, and much more. Keith, welcome to the Pop Shop Podcast, man. How's your week going, man?
It's going okay. It's going all right.
Yeah?
It's going well.
It's like 62 degrees in New York right now. We're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. I'm wearing a short sleeve shirt.
Didn't it snow last week? Wasn't it like snowy?
It was snowing last week. I know. And there's still snow on. It's still garbage snow all over the city.
What's garbage snow mean?
It's just like snow that refuses to melt, but is mixed with garbage and is like blackened and is nasty. You know, it's all that fun stuff.
That's the best part about living in New York is the garbage snow. We just have garbage here.
Isn't that part of Welcome to New York? Doesn't Taylor Swift sing about garbage snow?
Welcome to the garbage snow
city. Keith, before we get started on this rollicking Pop Shop podcast, a couple housekeeping notes. If you like the Pop Shop podcast, which we post every Thursday at 11 a.m. on Billboard.com, subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can download and stream right there. And if you like us and you want to help us out, give us a rating or review on iTunes. It helps our stats. We always appreciate the feedback. And if you have any questions for Keith or myself, find us and follow us on Twitter. He's at Keith_Caulfield. I am at Jason Lipschutz. So, Keith, are you ready to go, man?
Yes.
All right. Very, very serious. I mean, it's Madonna.
I'm ready to take a holiday with you. I am so crazy for you and your podcast, Jason.
Yeah.
I am living for this podcast. Living for it.
Because this podcast is synonymous with love, of course.
Yeah.
So, Keith, it's Madonna week. Rebel Heart out March 10th. Finally, after months of, you know,
leaks.
Semi-leaks and leaks and...
And full-on leaks. Yeah, you know.
And stage falls and all these kind of things. Mike Tyson collaborations. Rebel Heart is here. Before we get to the chartiness of it, what do you think of Rebel Heart, man? Do you enjoy it?
Well,
for those who don't know, Madonna is Keith's favorite artist. Keith, what do you think, man?
Okay, so to be perfectly honest, I didn't actually listen to the album until yesterday. We're recording this on Wednesday. The album came out on Tuesday. I listened to it when I was supposed to allegedly listen to it on Tuesday.
That you're shaming the fans.
Well, I mean before the album actually came out, I listened to two leaked tracks that came out, I think, last Thanksgiving. And that was under the assumption that those were just like, you know, oh, these are the only two things that are going to come out. You know, it's, you know, a weird little leak thing. And then when the sort of avalanche of leaks came out, I was just like, okay, yeah. I want to hold off until I hear the final complete versions because I know in my head that I'm going to get attached to the demo versions and I'm going to say, oh man, it was better on the demo. Cause there's a song on the album that was one of the two songs that I remember hearing. It was the title track, Rebel Heart. It's on the deluxe version of the album. And I think I kind of liked the demo version a little bit more. So if I'm thinking that just about one song, I probably would have thought about that about more songs. So that was part of the reason why, and also partly because, you know, you're just sort of trying to honor what the artist's intent is, you know? She wanted to deliver it on Tuesday, March 10th. So I've listened to it in full probably like three times. I'm way more familiar with the first chunk of the album, which came out in December, the first six songs. So I kind of feel like that was the album in my head, which sounds kind of crazy. But I've listened to it a bit. I don't know. What do you think about the album so far? You've listened to it, I think, a little bit more than I have.
Yeah, I've listened to it a little bit more. It's funny because "Living for Love," which is, and we'll get to that as a single and its performance so far. I still think that might be my favorite song on the album,
really?
which is weird to think about because you know it's usually not the case where like the lead single is my favorite song on the album, but yeah, that happens to be I think the strongest song. I think it's a good album. I'm not sure if it's an amazing Madonna album. I think that it. My criticism with it is that I think it bites off a little bit more than it can chew in terms of the different styles and collaborations, and
it's a bit all over the map.
It is. And it's like, and that's not a bad thing, but I just think that it's not as cohesive as I would want a Madonna pop album to be. Like, it's not like, you know, you listen to like Confessions on the Dance Floor and that just kind of has like a laser focus.
It's very consistent. It's very
exactly.
thematically. And also too, it's too, I think, because it had one producer, well, it had two producers, essentially. Stuart Price and Madonna produced Confessions on a Dance Floor. And it was so much, you know, of a whole work kind of idea that they released two different versions of the album. One that had, you know, dividers between the tracks, like normal, you know, silence between tracks. And then one that was like a continuous mix, like a continuous in the mix version. Because sonically, it all worked together. There was a through line. Whereas this album, you know, you go from a ballad to a sort of Middle Eastern thing to a ballad to like a thing. You're like, oh, wow. I mean, it's cool that there's so many different sounds, but I think it could be overwhelming to some people. And I'm also, it can be a little exhausting because this is her longest album in terms of the number of songs.
Yeah, that's the thing.
There are 14 songs on the standard version of the album. Only one of her previous studio albums has had 14 songs, and that's kind of a squishy one to even compare. The one I'm talking about is Erotica, and it had 14 songs, but only on the explicit version, and that 14th song was a song that barely even had Madonna on it, and no one even thinks of that as a real song. It was called Did You Do It? So really, this is her longest album, and most people are probably buying the deluxe version, which has 19 songs, and then there's a super deluxe version that even has more songs. So, I mean, it's great if you want tons of stuff, but I think also at the same time, there's something to be said for
brevity.
Yeah, brevity and pruning things back just a little bit, and a lot of people have said that this is kind of two albums struggling to get out. You know,
well, that she told you a couple months ago that she originally conceived it as two albums.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what she's been referring to ever since. You know, her rebel side and her heart side, and how it was kind of like, you know, two different albums. You know, kind of like a double album in one.
What's funny is that I feel like the Pop Shop podcast is kind of like that. Like, you are the podcast rebel side, and I am
the heart
side. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that said, I mean, there are only a couple songs where I'm like, kind of like, ooh, I don't know, like, cringy. like, there's a song called Sex, S-E-X, which is a little, but, I mean, certain songs that I love on the album, I love Ghost Town. And the first time I heard it in December, I thought, like, this is a hit. This is a hit. Hit. I really like Hold Tight, which is kind of like Ghost Town in a way, where it's very evocative, and it has kind of like, it's kind of like a sequel to Ghost Town in a way. I actually kind of like the iconic song with Chance the Rapper and Mike Tyson on it.
Yeah.
It sounds really cool. You know,
so what, I mean, so let's skip ahead. Let's talk about single possibilities, because we've talked on the show before that Living for Love is just not been working as a single.
It has yet to debut on the Billboard Hot 100 and probably will not, which that means it will be the first time that the lead single from a Madonna studio album has not charted on the Billboard Hot 100 since her very first album.
Yeah, kind of mind-boggling, right?
Yeah, but you know, you have to think of it sort of in different terms. You know, for an artist that has been on the charts for more than 30 years, any artist it is difficult to be consistent in charting. Bruce Springsteen doesn't chart on the Hot 100 with any regularity. Barbra Streisand doesn't anymore. Dylan doesn't. Prince doesn't. And that's, you have to think of her in that term, you know? So I'm like, you know, it's sort of par for the course. I kind of assume that Living for Love would have at least showed up somewhere towards the bottom half of the chart, maybe after the Grammy Awards, maybe after the video, but you know, such it is, it just hasn't shown up yet.
So what do you think is going to be the next single, which I assume is going to come pretty soon?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's Ghost Town, because she performed that on French television a week ago. It was the first live TV performance of the song. So you wouldn't be performing the track on TV if it wasn't probably in the back of your mind as an actual single. And I've heard rumblings that it would probably be the next single. So I think they're probably going to at least get the first week out here for the album, and then they'll probably, you know, hit the ground running with Ghost Town. But who knows? It could all change. I'm sure everything could probably change, you know, daily at this point.
Very true. So my last question for you, Keith, and I'm sorry to quiz you about Madonna and Rebel Heart.
Why am I not quizzing you about Madonna? What's your favorite song from the Madonna album, Jason? That's not Living for Love. You know, and my problem with Living for Love, I like the song. I just wish that her vocals were not processed in the way that they are, because they're making, she's tweaked her vocals in a way that makes her voice, you know, I don't like the way it sounds, and I wish that it was just her normal voice. That's just me.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, it's funny because you expect an artist like Madonna to kind of slow down, but it just hasn't really happened to Madonna yet. Like you said that it's hard to keep this going, but you know, people are still, this is the project that everyone is talking about this week. And speaking of which, Keith, let's get to a sales forecast. Do you have any kind of early sales forecast as to what Rebel Heart might sell?
Not really. I mean, I sort of do, but I don't sort of at this point, and this is Wednesday morning, by the time people are hearing this, there will be a story up on billboard.com that will have a much better forecast. So I don't have a really good number. I'll have a better number later today, which people will see by this point. On the website. I'm assuming it has a really good shot at number one.
That's kind of what I was really wondering.
Therefore, becoming her ninth number one album, and I like her upteenth millionth top 10 album. So I'm pretty sure it has a great shot at number one. But you never know. Luke Bryan has a new album out this week, and the Empire soundtrack just came out, and that show is red hot. So who knows what could happen.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Empire in a second. But stay tuned to Billboard.com, Keith's sales forecast story with a specific number for Rebel Heart and all those other releases is coming. So, Keith, we got to move on to Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams losing the Blurred Lines trial against the gay family. This has been a really huge story. Came out on Tuesday afternoon. Are you making Blurred Lines noises?
I'm doing a little blurred got to give it up lines. Got to give up the blurred lines.
Yeah, the lines between those songs
are blurred.
Some would say are blurred, yeah. Some would say.
Some people that like puns.
So this verdict was reached after 8 days of trial testimony in which Pharrell Williams and Robin Thicke both testified, and it was decided by a jury that Robin Thicke and Pharrell, who created Blurred Lines, which was the number one song in the country for many, many weeks in 2013. It was the song of the summer in 2013. And they have to pay, they paid $7.4 million, or they're going to have to pay $7.4 million.
The ruling is for over $7 million. I'm not sure if all that is coming from the two of them individually, or if some of those, if some of that money
is going
to
come. I believe it is. Okay. No, I believe there, it
there,
is
there, were, there was like different amounts that added up to over $7
million. Yeah, exactly. There was like a $4 million for them personally, and then for the another $3 million and change for other causes. I don't have it right in front of me, but $7.4 million. Keith, it seems like a lot of people were surprised by this ruling. I don't know how closely you've been following this trial, but what was your reaction when you heard?
I haven't been following it super closely. I've been following it probably as much as, you know, the average person has. I think what was interesting is that they evidently were not allowed to play very much of any of the two tracks.
Yeah.
In court. I think they played like maybe a tiny little snippet, maybe.
Yeah. So what the thing was for those who haven't been following, it was ruled because of copyright law and how copyright law changed in 1978 that got to give it up. The original recording was not copyrighted, just the sheet music itself, and that is all that could be presented in court.
On an interview this morning, the attorneys representing the gay family said that they did play tiny snippets of the song. So
yeah,
I'm not. What did they play then? If they couldn't play the actual master recording, did they play anything?
I think they couldn't play the full recording. I think that's where the
all you have to do is play a little bit of that intro where you hear like, you know, the percussion and the people laughing and joking. Of course, we should probably play on the podcast a little bit of the intro to "Got to Give It Up."
Oh,
and
we
a
will.
A little bit of blurred lines so people can hear it themselves.
Oh, we will.
Oh, we will. So what I think is interesting is that people had to, the jury had to compare the sheet music of Got to Give It Up to, I would assume, the sheet music of Blurred Lines, which, according to stories that I read, they don't really line up. It's not clear that one is mirroring the other. What we hear in our ears between the two songs is the similarities in the production and the percussion and the hand claps and the hoots and the hollerins and the way it sort of
and that's why a lot of people assumed that Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams had a great shot of winning this case, because like you said, the similarities in the production really weren't playing a factor. At least that's what many people believe, because of that copyright law. And you know, that's where the similarities lie, like you said. It's in the production, and that was kind of not permissible in court. So that's kind of why I was stunned by this ruling.
I think I would imagine that they probably, that's probably why Robin Thicke, I would imagine, and Pharrell took, you know, didn't settle, because they felt that the two songs were not the same in terms of their melody, and therefore they probably had a shot. Whereas, you know, we were talking about this in the office the other day, not with you, but here in LA, we were talking about this, and we were saying, you know, that's probably why Sam Smith decided to settle, his case with Tom Petty between "Stay With Me" and "I Won't Back Down," because when you compare them in terms of the melody, it's essentially the same, you know, "Stay with me, I won't back down." All you have to do is just change the speed of one of the songs, and it essentially matches it. And it, you know, in that case, you're like, well, clearly they didn't mean to rip them off, but they did, and it was probably a subconscious thing. And that also reminds me of when the Rolling Stones put out their song "Anybody Seen My Baby." And then as soon as it came out, people said, you know, this sounds like Katie Lang's "Constant Craving." Like, it sounds just like the chorus. And Mick Jagger was like, well, I haven't heard that song, but I could have heard it. I could have heard the song from my daughter's bedroom. You know, I think she has the Katie Lang album. Maybe I heard it subconsciously and maybe it worked.
And that's the thing.
And then they gave Katie Lang songwriting credit.
Because they
figured, in like, you know, you can clearly hear the similarities. And so, yeah, there's a difference between these different cases, and that's probably why Robin Thicke and Pharrell thought they had a shot.
Exactly.
And they'll probably appeal if they haven't already.
Yeah. Yeah, they haven't said that. I believe that they put out a statement saying that they're going to review their options or something along those lines. Keith, I mean, you touched upon it, something like Sam Smith and Tom Petty. The interesting thing about this case, the Robin Thicke versus the Gay Family case, is that this happens often, but most times the two parties settle or figure something out, or it doesn't, or, you know, it goes to a summary. It doesn't go into like a full trial with a jury. That's why this was such an interesting dilemma. And I mean, what do you think, man? I know, like you said, you haven't been following it as closely, but do you think this kind of sets a scary precedent in pop music or in art in general? Like we were joking online, on iChat with each other about like music videos, ripping off old classic movies and stuff like that. Like what, where does the line end between imitation and theft? It's interesting.
Where's the line drawn? You know, because
it's blurred. That's the thing.
There are tons and tons of music videos that are homages to existing works. You know, an artist that I like a lot, Madonna, you know, many of her music videos are homages and to existing photographs and other visual mediums. If you look at her video, I mean, tons of her videos, videos for Hollywood and Bedtime Story.
Yeah.
Oh Father references Citizen Kane, Express Yourself references Metropolis. The list kind of goes on and on. And oftentimes the estates of these various photographers and directors and creators would say that in print, saying, well, this is clearly kind of referencing our existing work. And I think, I don't know if those ever rose to a settlement. But I think, you know, what's this mean? Alfred Hitchcock's estate can, you know, sue Brian De Palma for a bunch of his films that were clearly homages to Hitchcock movies. Where does this, how far can this go? And does this,
what about like One Direction, who are clearly nodding to
like a million
classic rock songs?
Can the Clash like take One Direction to court? Can Def Leppard take One Direction to court? Because I can hear Def Leppard in Midnight Memories, and I can hear, I can hear like a specific song in Midnight Memories. It's not a sample, but I can hear that they clearly are trying to reference a specific song. And the Clash's Should I Stay or Should I Go is clearly referenced in
Live While We're Young.
The first one. Was it Live While We're Young? I thought it was.
Yeah, it's the same riff.
Great. Where does it end? Where does it end?
It's a little sad. And I wonder how much people were crying for Doomsday on Twitter, saying like, oh, this is going to be the end of pop
music. People
like
to cry
Doomsday
on Twitter.
Yeah, obviously that's not the case, but it will be interesting to see how much extra litigation this Robin Thicke verdict causes. It's gonna be interesting. I gotta talk to my dad. I gotta talk to my dad about it because he's a lawyer. I'll talk to him.
Were they trying to take this to a higher court and it got kicked down to a lower court? Is that what happened? Or
no, I don't believe so.
Because this seems like this should go higher. I mean, really, do you want a jury of just like random folks like deciding like what could suddenly be like copyright cases between, you know, artists.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Maybe it does get kicked up higher in
Supreme Court,
process.
Baby. Let's make it happen.
Supreme freaking court. All right. So from the song of the summer from 2013 to the song of the summer from 2014, Iggy Azalea, who dominated last year with
and
songs like Fancy.
How the Mighty Have Fallen.
Black Widow. Yeah. So she has had a rough 2015. It kind of continued this week when it was revealed, actually we broke the story on Billboard, that her 2015 Spring Arena Tour, the Great Escape Tour, was being postponed to September.
She's escaped
the dates
from
were
Ticketmaster.com.
It was postponed due to production delays, and
production
the problem with this
delays.
Is production delays.
Does that just mean that no one was buying tickets and really just...
Well, that's what a lot of people are speculating. And obviously, her label Def Jam has refuted that, but you know they've said that it is due to production delays. They want her show to be as amazing as possible. I mean, the problem with this is that the Great Escape Tour had Nick Jonas and Tinashe signed on as opening acts, which are pretty great opening acts for your debut arena tour. Nick Jonas coming off a huge hit with Jealous and a dedicated fan base, Tinashe, a rising star with Two On.
The two of them now, should just go out on their own, like, you know, theater tour. Make it happen.
Well, that's the thing. Well, it's already been announced that Nick is going on a spring headlining tour, and Tinashe announced that she is touring this summer. Not sure in what capacity yet, if it's a headlining tour, if it's as another support act, but she will be on the road this summer.
You know, it's amazing what's happened with Iggy. She's turned into basically the Vanilla Ice of like, you know, the early 90s. Like, you know.
Well, that's what I want to talk about is that I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
That's kind of an extreme thing, but I mean,
that's a little extreme.
I'm trying to think of like an example of like, you know, you were riding high on the charts and you were like the new pop queen. And then all of a sudden it's like, everyone's hating on you and got to kick her to the curb. Boo. You know,
it's interesting because Iggy Azalea more than any other, you think about the last four artists behind the songs of the summer, 2011, LMFAO. 2012, Carly Rae Jepsen. 2013, ooh, Robin Thicke. Dang. 2014, Iggy Azalea. And the thing about those four is, out of those four, I would say Iggy Azalea, you know, had a huge song of the summer in Fancy, but did the best job of sustaining that popularity of that song with Black Widow, and she was on Problem with Ariana Grande.
And Beg For It song was actually a hit too.
Beg For It, yeah. So that's the thing, is that it's not like she was a one-hit wonder on Hard Times. She's a legitimate star who's performed, you know, at a ton of award shows and is super popular, has a huge following. And now it's fascinating that her 2015 has just been plagued with these little problems that keep growing and growing. Like, you think of like Papa John's Gate, when she was the day of the Grammys, where everybody should be focusing on the Iggy at the Grammys, and she's up for Best New Artist, and she's really making an impact, and instead she's beefing with Papa John's on Twitter. And then she leaves social media altogether, turns her Twitter and her Instagram over to her management team, and, you know, her new single, Trouble, with Jennifer Hudson, is not on the Hot 100. It's you know, it might be a hit someday in the coming weeks.
Like, it might be a hit someday.
No, I mean, but you know, it's only been a couple weeks.
She's having a rough patch right now, and I think a lot of this could have been handled better around the time when Azealia Banks was making her remarks about white rappers like Macklemore and Iggy Azalea, and Iggy could have handled this better. She could have, instead of tweeting like really sort of like aggressive, sort of, it could be interpreted as ill-advised and uneducated responses to not just Azealia Banks, but also the hip hop community.
Yeah.
I think she could have handled this a lot better. And I think she probably shouldn't shoot her mouth off on social media, because, you know, what should have happened was, I remember seeing an interview with her with, of all people, RuPaul, where RuPaul was asking Iggy, and this was like last year, about, you know, the idea of like wearing wigs and dressing up and putting on like this show, this sort of hip hop show. And Iggy said, she's like, I'm basically a drag queen. She's like, I'm basically like putting on this show where I'm this Australian girl, this Australian white girl, and I'm, you know, I'm putting on this kind of persona. And I think she probably could have handled the addressing of her appropriating hip hop culture and rap culture and a style of voice better. And she could have said something a little bit more eloquent, and she didn't. And that's
totally,
that's why everyone is piling on her, because she's coming off like dumb, you know, white girl from Australia, when that's not clearly what she is, but it doesn't matter. That's what she appears to be on Twitter.
I think you summed it up perfectly in saying that literally, I mean, there's been so many instances in the last 6 months or so where you could have said, Iggy Azalea could have said, responded to this more eloquently. And that's the thing. And it's just been a problem with her. And again, I think she's just too big to, at this point, to just kind of go away. She's not going to be an LMFAO. I don't think at all. But I do think that she needs a PR win. And this tour postponed, like, you know, if the tour did well this spring, which, again, it's her first arena show, it's a huge deal that she's going to be headlining arenas, then that's a PR win. And now it's going to be, you know, pushed back to September because of quote unquote production delays, and it's going to have new openers. So yeah, I don't know. It's been an interesting kind of couple months for Iggy, with, like I said, all these kind of small little problems mounting to people saying like, what's going on with Iggy Azalea?
You know, it's funny. I was talking about this the other day with someone, and we were talking about how, you know, you, all you know, her coming from Australia, all she knows of hip hop and rap is what she hears. And she hears people rapping in a certain kind of style, using linguistics and language that are foreign to her as an Australian. You know, she speaks in a different manner than she performs. And I think there's a whole slew of British bands that sound like they're American dudes when they sing, because they're kind of aping a lot of American bands, whether they intend to or not. I mean, are we really calling out a bunch of British bands and saying, why is it that, you know, you sound really American? Shouldn't you sound more British when you sing? I mean, I think, it, you know, just sometimes it's a very innocuous thing, and I don't think she meant any harm, and I think she probably should have said a lot of things very differently.
Yeah, it's tough. And the last thing I'll say about this is that it's so easy. People lose sight of the fact that it's always possible for an artist to turn their problems around. Like, look at what Lady Gaga's done over the past couple months with, you know, at this time last year, we were saying like, oh, art pop isn't working, the songs aren't working. She had this weird South by Southwest performance and that drew a lot of criticism. And now she's, you know, off of rave reviews from an Oscars performance. Cheek did well. It was number one. I mean, you know, you just never know. You never know what kind of phase Iggy Azalea is going to enter in her career next.
Mariah Carey went from, you know, half naked on TRL with an ice cream truck.
She's like...
and glitter and just a glitter bomb to We Belong Together and the biggest single hit of her career. Boom. So, you know, Justin Bieber suddenly has, you know... Like, he's coming back around
now. He's slowly doing it,
man. Anything is possible.
And we'll talk about that. I want to talk about that in the weeks ahead, maybe, because the roast is coming up. But yeah, like, Bieber's getting some of that. It's like comeback season for Bieber. It feels like it, man.
I just wish he'd have a better haircut. Man, his hair always looks like crap lately. I mean, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it looks better like in this past week, but like all those Calvin Klein ads and the Men's Health and like he was on Ellen. It's just like this horrible shag wig that he has attached to his head.
I think he needs to go back to the bangs, honestly. Like, just bring it back.
I mean, you established, I'm like, you had the whole, you had an Aniston, you had the Jennifer, you had the Bieber,
the Rachel.
I mean,
Rachel.
But his hair looked great circa boyfriend, by the way. It's just,
I don't know
like
how we got
right
on
now.
This tangent.
I'm just saying he needs a better haircut. It needs to shave regularly because the wispy, it just doesn't work.
Hot take on the Pop Shop Podcast, Justin Bieber.
This is like The View. We're
your
talking about like hairstyles.
Sucks. All right, man. So let's move on to the Hot 100. Uptown Funk, still number one, 10th week in a row. And, you know, right behind it, Thinking Out Loud, Ed Sheeran, now 8 weeks at number two. And you made a note of this when we were prepping for this show, that not a lot of songs have been number two for 2 months, basically.
Yeah, this can almost be like your early chart stat of the week. Thinking Out Loud has been stuck at number two for 8 weeks. The last song to spend 8 weeks stuck at number two and two being that song's peak was back in 2004 when Mario Winans featuring Inya, remember? And P. Diddy took I Don't Wanna Know to number two for 8 weeks. So there have only been eight songs, as you said, nine, including Ed Sheeran, that have peaked at number two for at least 2 months. Meaning they didn't go any higher. They stopped at number two. It's always the worst thing. You end up stuck at number two for like months and you just can't get to number one. And that could be what happens with Ed Sheeran because Uptown Funk is just so big. For what it's worth, the longest run at number two without ever going to number one, there's actually two songs that both spent 10 weeks stuck at number two but could never get to number one. You already know the answer, so I'm not going to ask you what they were. The last one to do it was Missy Elliott's Work It.
It's a shame that it never hit number one.
Back in 2002. And then before that, Foreigner's Waiting for a Girl Like You spent 10 weeks at number two. I think it was stuck behind, I want to say Physical by Olivia Newton-John for most of that run. I think like 9 out of the 10 weeks it was behind Physical. So there's your not chart stat of the week, but it kind of works as one.
We need some kind of like, some alternate universe non-charts out of the week music. Yeah. We like, you know how that's like a kind of a bouncy little tune. We need like a little like bum bum bum, like a little something like that.
We'll maybe just sample we'll get you and turn it into a song. We'll get right on.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Also, debuting on the Hot 100 this week, Kanye West, All Day, debuts at number 15 on the chart. Now, this seems to be his new album. Still does not have a release date. It's called So Help Me God. But All Day seems to be, you know, the quote-unquote focus track after Only One, which he's performed all over the place. Both songs feature Paul McCartney. And Keith, another thing you pointed out, another top 40 hit for Paul McCartney. It's 2015, and he's racking up those top 40 hits, man.
Yeah. The last time Paul McCartney, and even though he's not really, I mean, I think out of the three songs that he's charted this year, two of them have been with, all three of them have been with Kanye in some capacity. Yep. One of them was also with Rihanna. I think the only one where he's actually seen in any capacity was the Rihanna 4 or 5 Seconds one. And I think his vocals were kind of buried in the mix. I think he's just relegated to doing guitar. Paul McCartney relegated to doing guitar. You know what I mean? I didn't mean that in a bad way. So yeah, he's had three top 40 hits this year on the Hot 100, which is crazy. The last time he had three top 40 singles in a calendar year was back in 1984. When
crazy.
Say, his duet with Michael Jackson, hit number one. And then he followed that up with his own tracks. So Bad, which went to 23, and then No More Lonely Nights went to number 6 later that year in 1984. But yeah, it's weird how Paul McCartney has made this incredible sort of chart comeback, and I'm still convinced that he is at work on a crazy collaborations album because, I mean, he was hanging out with Lady Gaga a few weeks ago, and she tweeted a picture. So I fully expect a Paul McCartney album with a bunch of guest stars to materialize in the next few months.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that All Day is the Paul McCartney song with the most N-words in it of all time.
Man, that song is full of some expletives. Expletives? I can't even say that word.
I'll have to fact check that, but I'm pretty confident that I nailed that chart stat. So also on the Hot 100, and we're going to race through some of these things before because we have to go. Carly Rae Jepsen, who was our guest on the podcast last week.
Hey, Carly.
Once again, thanks to Carly for stopping by. Her new single, I Really Like You, debuts at number 48. It's worth noting that this song has not been serviced to radio yet, correct? So it's just basically 48 on digital sales, streams.
Yeah, it's charting mostly just from streams and sales. There's a little bit of airplay, but I mean, I don't know if it's officially been serviced. It's out there. It's not like radio can't play it if they don't want to, but we know how radio is. They don't play anything until they're told to.
Done and done.
Boom.
And also worth noting, and this is something that I wrote about for today, the Empire songs continue to really
Empire
succeed.
Range just won't stop.
Yeah, you know, they're in an I'll stop with the Empire puns. Empire's You're So Beautiful, not only which that song debuted on last week's Hot 100 chart at number 71, it moves up 24 spots to number 47, but also the new song Conqueror, which is a duet between Jussie Smollett and Estelle. Hey, Estelle, welcome back to the Hot 100. That debuts right outside the top 40 as well. Yeah. Keith, I mean, this is just, these songs are going and go, like, they're really making more of an impact on our charts as the audience of the show keeps growing.
Literally and every week.
Yeah, and as I think the songs keep getting better, and I think that's a huge part of their success is that, you know, You're So Beautiful and Conqueror are probably the two best songs that the show's produced so far.
Well, I think Conqueror actually existed as a Estelle track before it became an Empire track. I think it came out on her own. She released a single, I think, late last year, and I think...
Really?
Yeah. It charted on our adult R&B airplay
chart. That's interesting. That's news to me.
Yeah, and then it was on her own album that came out in February as just a solo track, and then now it's in a duet version. So I'm pretty sure it's the same song, except now it has new vocals added in.
You know what's interesting about that? And like I said, that was news to me. What's interesting about that is that she doesn't play Estelle on the show. She plays basically Estelle, but her name is Delphine. So, like, it's Estelle playing an R&B artist with the song Conqueror, but it's not Estelle. Like,
it's a very meta moment.
It's very interesting.
Conqueror is the highest charting single so far from the Empire show on the Billboard Hot 100. It almost makes the top 40. It could go top 40 next week, considering the show's popularity and considering the fact that the soundtrack to the show, the full-length soundtrack, came out this past Tuesday, and it's headed for probably the top three on the Billboard 200 next week. Who knows what could happen on the Hot 100 next week.
All right, man. So before we go, a couple things. Let's get to a very quick version, because we have to go, of Soon to Be Hits.
All right, man. Are you saying that we have to go because there's literally someone knocking on the door there?
No.
I mean, tell me if it is.
Nobody. No, it's not. It's not true. Okay. It's not true. We got some time, man. Because we're running a little long, we're almost at the 40-minute mark. Let's just do one Soon to Be Hit. This week, you had one that you wanted to highlight.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure. Me. Well, it's Florence and the Machine's What Kind of Man, which actually goes top 10 on our alternative chart this week. It's actually their first top 10 single since their breakthrough hit, Dog Days Are Over, back in 2011. And that was also their first top 10. So it's a cool rockin' song. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a look at, maybe mainstream top 40 radio, but considering that it's top 10 alternative, that gives you, certainly a nice placement on our charts. I think it's a cool track, and I think that it could possibly cross over to some other formats of radio. But definitely check it out if you haven't already. It's Florence the Machine, What Kind of Man.
Yeah, they're really gearing up for a huge push in 2015. New album out in June, like you said, and they're playing at Coachella and Governor's Ball and a bunch of other places. So happy to have Florence the Machine back. All right, man, thank you for Soon to Be Hits. Soon to be hit, I should say.
It's soon to be
it's
hit.
Soon to be hit.
It's, I mean, it's a hit, but not, it's not a huge hit yet.
It's top getting 10 there. On the it's soon, chart. Yeah. Soon to be. Man, let's just do it back to back. This is the first time we did soon to be hits and charts out of the week back to back, but it's time, man. Are you ready?
Yes.
Let's do it. Dude. Keith's charts out of the week.
Do 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 blank. So this week in 1988, Rick Astley hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100.
With
Never Gonna Give You Up, Never Gonna Let You Down, Never Gonna Roll. Okay, I'll stop. The song, well before its Rick Rolling days, topped the Hot 100 for two straight weeks, beginning with the chart dated March 12th, 1988. The British singer saw both of his first two singles lead the list that year. After Never Gonna Give You Up, he topped the chart with Together Forever. Together Forever. I always slide into my Rick Astley impersonation because he has that voice. After that, he notched five more top 40 hits, and he last visited the chart in 1993. Of course, Never Gonna Give You Up has remained popular over the years and consistently sells about 1,000 downloads a week in the US. But the reason why most people probably today know the song, if they didn't, if they weren't alive in 1988, the reason why most people know the song now. Okay, well, a lot of people know the song now because of the Rickrolling phenomenon, where someone dupes someone into clicking onto something on the web, only to be led to the video for Never Gonna Give You Up instead. That craze took off in the summer of 2007 on 4chan, if we believe Wiki, and ever since the sales have spiked. And you can look specifically in that summer of 2007, the sales went from below 1,000 to a couple thousand a week. So really, I'm sure Rick is just perfectly fine with this whole Rickrolling thing because he's making money off of this song and it's sales
rolling
each week.
In the dough.
He's rolling in the Never Gonna Give You Up money. So there you go. There's your chart stat of the week this week in 1988. Rick Astley hit number one.
Thanks, man, for your chart stat of the week. Love it, man. Thank you. All right. That is going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast this week. Keith covered a lot this week. Appreciate it as always. And yeah, man, do you have any parting words?
I do not.
We have some cool guests coming up on the Pop Shop Podcast in the coming weeks. Stay tuned. And once again, subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a rating. We appreciate it. And we will see you next week. Thanks again. Take care.